Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Rancher Government Solutions. Here's today's moderator.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Federal Insights. I'm your host, Eric White. One of the agencies who are utilizing containerization as an approach in cloud computing is the Federal Aviation Administration. It's becoming a popular method thanks to its efficiency and flexible use of resources. To find out just how the agency is benefiting, Federal News Network's Tom Temin spoke to Sean McIntyre, who is the Director of Solution Delivery at the FAA's Office of the CIO.
The FAA, there's a pretty bright line drawn between mission and mission support, support in the terms of the IT domains. I operate in the mission support side, and I do a lot of collaboration with the mission side and certainly try to align with where they are going as much as practical. The FAA has done a ton of custom software development over the past few decades, and most of that was before DevSecOps. So we have a pile of legacy applications that were not born on DevSecOps and haven't taken full advantage of it yet. We've got a great portfolio insight because we invest heavily in following the Federal CIO Council's application rationalization playbook. And we're at the point where we're really starting to leverage that investment to help us plan and implement modernization strategies, especially with our line of business partners.
And before we go any further, let me just have you just define a little bit more carefully when you say mission, that is the systems that touch airplanes and control air traffic versus everything else that goes on.
That's right. It's in the FAA, it's referred to as the National Airspace or NAS. And there's actually considered to be air gap separation from a networking perspective between them and the rest of the world.
So what are some of the mission support priorities now that require some real software attention?
Well, a lot of it is the after processing, the trend analysis, the processing of the schedules after the fact so that they can be put to, it impacts anything from aircraft maintenance scheduling, looking for trends in aircraft maintenance problems that that can be addressed, so on and so forth, that sort of thing.
In other words, the work that you do feeds back to the mission because the mission is enhanced with post-facto analysis that might be done by other applications running offline, so to speak.
Absolutely. And I emphasize that word support. We definitely support the mission. And when you think of the FAA, they like to refer to the air traffic organization as making sure that the airplanes don't run into each other in the air. But the aviation safety, which is on the mission support side, the aviation safety organization is what makes the airplanes be able to take off and land. So they oversee that whole rules making, et cetera, that happens on the ground.
Yeah, so there's a lot of applications then that you are developing. Oh, and you mentioned that you started before the DevSecOps era. Are you now in the DevSecOps era?
Yeah, we definitely are. That doesn't mean that every application is being, is utilizing DevSecOps yet, but we're definitely there. There's, if you look at the continuum, we have a solid number of applications at any point on that continuum.
All right, and give us a sense of how it works, and especially in terms of cybersecurity. The term you hear so much nowadays in industry is moving cybersecurity left. That is earlier in the development cycle to make sure that security is part of it. How do you approach that particular aspect?
Well, DevSecOps is really about breaking down the silos between dev, security, and the IT operations. And the way to do that is with tools and automation. And every slice of the DevSecOps pie has multiple tools that provide that capability. Adopting a set combination of those tools in a single platform has been a trick for us, and I think that's pretty common across the industry and the other agencies. It's pretty straightforward for our greenfield development projects, but figuring out how to get our legacy applications on the tool chain has been a challenge, or it was a challenge. In fact, when I first came to the FAA in 2019, I was told that 80% of our legacy apps were on the DevSecOps toolchain, which sounded pretty great. But when I dug deeper, it became clear that my teams thought that merely using our code repository qualified for being on the toolchain. And given that criteria, it wasn't so great. So we adopted a very clearer definition of what constitutes toolchain integration by turning to Heroku's 12-app model, 12-factor app model, and we identified four minimum factors directly related to tool chain integration. And then we created a repeatable process we call four-factoring an app. And since then, we've made a lot of progress applying DevSecOps even to our legacy portfolio.
That is to say, DevSecOps using the tool chain that you have for that can apply to factoring old applications as well as developing new ones.
Exactly. And we've made a lot of progress in getting them on there. And you know, that enables us to enable as much security governance into the tool chain as we can. That means the platform takes care of logging and monitoring and shipping it all off to the Security Operations Center or SOC. And it means automatic vulnerability scans before and after build and real time in production. Our goal is for the platform to take care of as much of this as practical and let the application and applications inherit these common capabilities so that the developers don't have to worry about it. And our experience is that, you know, very often the developers won't worry about it unless, you know, if they're left to their own design. So embedding it into the platform is pretty important to us.
And when a legacy application is refactored, why would you do that? Is it for cloud redeployment?
Well, a lot of our applications are in the cloud, in their legacy form. You know, we followed a little bit of lift and shift, but you're right. We definitely want to be able to take care of cloud native architectures, and you know, primarily containers is what we're thinking of. So when I mentioned integrating them with the tool chain, that doesn't necessarily refactor them, but we are in the process, and we've developed a pretty solid process to refactor them for containers. We're leaving them in their monolithic form, but you know, there's a lot of benefits to containerizing them.
Containerizing them then preserves the logic within the container, but the container itself can be combined through APIs with other containers, and then you can make new functions, perhaps.
Yeah, and you know, so you know, one of the things about containerization is that it abstracts the business logic from the operating system, so it makes it very mobile, and that's one of our primary goals with containerization is to enable that mobility between different hyperscale cloud environments or even cloud and premise. We want to be able to put these workloads wherever it makes most sense for us. So we're making a lot of progress there, but at the same time, we've got a strategy going on where we want to start emphasizing microservices, which also leverage containers, and that's more akin to what you were referring to, where you have that separation between the services, and you can reuse them and develop them in isolation, so that you don't have that need for cross-team coordination every time you want to do a release for a given service.
And with containerized applications and microservices-based applications, can you run those in the premise data centers as well as in the cloud? Or did that require some redo of the data centers such that, from a hardware sense, they resemble the clouds?
Yeah, one of the primary goals that we've had when we've been, you know, the DevSecOps pipeline or tool chain for a container environment is a little bit different than a pipeline for a legacy type application. So we've built out a container specific DevSecOps tool chain pipeline platform, however you want to refer to it. And one of our primary goals speaks to that. We want it to be able to operate both in the hyperscale cloud environments and on premise. What we want is to have that developer experience be the same, consistent across all of these environments. And we want to be able to move those workloads wherever without having to do anything to them. So yeah, you're right. We've really focused on being able to do that.
I guess, yeah, right. Because it's long past the days when you write software to the machine code instruction sets. That's like from the propeller-driven aircraft days.
Exactly.
And by the way, who does this work at FAA? Do you have staff programmers or is it contractors or a combination of both?
Well, most of our development staff are contractors, and it can be tricky to be really prescriptive about how they do their development. But I think having a mature DevSecOps platform is a key part of that strategy. And, you know, we're trying to follow Dr. Will Roper's advice to build and either share or furnish the tech stack. And that avoids all that variability and the complexity that comes from each development team doing their own thing.
And by the way, how does the data get treated in all of these applications? Because in hyper virtualized environments, the virtual machine has everything in there. you know, the networking and the data and so forth, but yet your mission side is generating a lot of the data that's used in these applications for analysis after the mission, you know, in the off hours, so to speak. How does the whole data complex work in the environment you've described?
Well, you still have to rely on those transactional databases until you really, really get into it. And so into the microservices architecture. So even though the business logic may be containerized, it's still reaching over to a traditional database type of a service. It may not be running on a VM. It might be one of the integrated services provided by a cloud provider, but it is separate from the container platform in most cases.
That's Sean McIntyre, Director of Solution Delivery at the Federal Aviation Administration. We'll have more of his interview with Federal News Network's Tom Temin after a quick break. I'm Eric White.
When security, speed, and scale are essential to your mission success, you need a partner who can deliver open source and cloud-native software solutions designed to address the unique security and operational needs of the U.S. government and military. Whether it's in the cloud, on-prem, or at the edge, Rancher Government Solutions offers the leading software stack for teams adopting containers, addressing the challenges of managing multiple Kubernetes clusters at scale while providing DevOps teams with integrated tools for running containerized workloads. Learn more at ranchergovernment.com.
We now return to our interview with Sean McIntyre, Director of Solution Delivery in the FAA's Office of the CIO. He spoke to Federal News Network's Tom Temin.
Getting back to the security issue, you mentioned that the tool chain is the way to ensure secure development from the outset of a project, and also that it's difficult to dictate how a contractor programmer specifically works. So do you also have some way of scanning or otherwise checking software containers or modules as they're created, such that you know that they will pass muster with the security operations people?
Yeah, we certainly do. And with containers, the scanning that happens before build and after build and runtime is the dynamic, you know, it's either static or dynamic, whichever side of the build you're on. But the challenge with containers is there's really no place to put a endpoint detection and response agent on the container itself. And so we've invested in tools that are able to scan in real time, in production, the containers while they're running. So it is a special case with containers once it's in production, because you're not going to put something right on it.
Because containers themselves communicate with their own APIs. So does the tool that you use, the tool set that you use, is it API based such that it can see into the container the way another container would see into the container, if I'm stating this in reasonable English?
Yeah. It's actually even lower level than that. It's going in through the Kubernetes stack and looking at the container that way. So it's not really hitting the API or the interface into the container. It's looking at it at an even lower level. So it's even more effective as far as we're concerned.
So are you looking for vulnerabilities that might be in the logics, in the pieces of logic that go into the container? And is there also something that is inherent or inherent vulnerabilities of containers themselves that you also have to worry about?
So yeah, when we're looking at the static code scans that we do before the build are looking at the business logic, and they're pretty good at detecting those sorts of weaknesses in the code itself. And we're also, it's more about the supply chain of a container, for instance. So a lot of times you'll accept a container image from somewhere else, and you don't always know what's been put into that container. And so we have tools that actually make sure that we're accepting container images from trusted sources, number one, but also scanning those images pretty constantly. And so we have hardened container images that we start with every time. And what we try to do is start with that clean, hardened container image rather than accepting an entire package from whatever source, and then inject the code into it and light it up that way.
And what role does open source play in all of this? In other words, are your container images from open source sources, and therefore you want to make sure that they're hardened per FAA standards?
It plays a big role in it. And yes, we do want to make sure that it's hardened from FAA standards or by FAA standards. But what we start with is pretty bare bones and build on top of it. And so there's not a lot of opportunity for stuff to get injected into it. That's more of a situation where you're taking a completely containerized application and using that. But as I said, we're kind of focused on starting from scratch with a clean basic image and then building on top of that on the fly in our platform.
And just backing up for a moment, give us a sense of the scope of applications you're dealing with, maybe the sheer numbers. I know some of them are sensitive and you don't want to really talk about, you know, what you're replacing and modernizing to compromise security of the FAA. But are you really in a continuous mode of modernizing everything? I mean, how does this work operationally?
Well, so we track, you know, I mentioned the portfolio insight earlier. We track for the mission support side over 700 applications. And we gather about 70 data points for all of those, 75, maybe 80 by now, data points for all of those. And it talks about technical debt and that sort of thing. And we report out on that to our business partners, many of whom have responsibility for investing in the you know, remediation of technical debt. When I think of application modernization, I think of things that either add value to the application or reduce the level of effort that's required to remediate technical debt, vulnerabilities, and those sorts of things. So there may be some refactoring associated with that. So within my area of responsibility, I have 200 applications that we sustain, and we have recently just refactored about 27 of those applications, and that really kind of got us an opportunity to build our refactoring muscle memory so that we can go forward and kind of accelerate. We have about 32 that are in a queue ready to go for refactoring for containers. And at any given time, we have about 6 or 7 applications in my AOR that are under greenfield development. Across the FAA, I can't tell you. It could be, you know, a lot more than that.
But greenfield developments then are done so that they result in this containerized state. You're not starting.
In most cases, they are. There are some that are still following the sort of server-based model, but in most cases, they are containerized these days.
And the overall purpose, just to make sure we understand that, of the containerizing is because they can be more portable with respect to premises and cloud, and also because that's an amenable way to have them for future development and maybe reconstitution.
Yeah, and you know, I talked about that technical debt remediation. When you use containers, you don't have to worry about the every 3-year scramble to upgrade all of your operating system versions and that sort of thing. So it really makes it easy to keep your applications technical debt free. And it, you know, as we all know, any technical debt always becomes a security vulnerability at some point. So it's in the end, it's about security, always about security.
Right. And the 75 data points that you gather for each of the applications, that's a way of assessing which ones you need to do first, basically?
Absolutely. And that has really helped open the eyes of our business partners. And, you know, IT doesn't have applications for us. We operate and we sustain applications for our business partners for their business reasons. And so they have to be willing to invest in them, and opening, you know, being able to come to the table and say, here's the state of your portfolio of applications has really helped them make decisions on what to do with those applications.
And how far from the mission does mission support get? What I'm asking is, what about business office applications, HR, finance, that type of thing? Is that also under the purview of mission support, or is that just a whole other group to begin with?
No, that's in mission support. You know, mission and mission support are sort of concepts, and you're either on one side of that line or the other. And so all of the financial stuff is on the mission support side. It's very critical. I mean, there's absolutely highly critical applications on the mission support side. So it's I don't mean to downplay the criticality of everything that's going on the mission support side. Like I said earlier, the ABS, the aviation safety line of business has hundreds of applications, and they're all about rulemaking and governing the maintenance and safety of the aircraft while they're sitting on the ground. But of course, there's HR in the game. The finance stuff is in the game across the board.
But safe to say the FAA doesn't do anything unless it does it meticulously.
Oh, yeah. I've always said that the culture of an organization reflects its mission, and the FAA needs to be meticulous in their mission, and that's the culture of the agency. And, you know, a lot of times it seems like the FAA is slow to move forward, but it's because they're thinking about it. They want to make sure that the moves and decisions that they make are the right ones. But once they make them, they really get going on it. So it's been an interesting experience to work for the FAA in that regard.
And would you, as a final question, from what you're saying, I would guess that you consider yourself one of the leading edge organizations for software development in the federal government, since you are so fully into that DevSecOps, containerized, cloud portable, secure area.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say we're on the leading edge. I don't want to be that self-promotional, but we're trying to stay up with everyone that's on the leading edge. And we do collaborate across, with other agencies to hear what they're doing. And there's a lot of great stuff going on in the federal government, not just in, the Department of Defense has its own great stuff going on, but there's a lot of really mature, getting it things going on in the federal government these days. And it's an exciting time. And I think that when it all really kind of plays out, the federal government's going to come out looking pretty good across the board.
Sean McIntyre is Director of Solution Delivery for the Office of the CIO at the FAA, speaking there with Federal News Network's Tom Temin. If you missed any of this interview, you can find it online. Head to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Rancher Government Solutions on Federal News Network.
When security, speed, and scale are essential to your mission success, you need a partner who can deliver open source and cloud native software solutions designed to address the unique security and operational needs of the U.S. government and military. Whether it's in the cloud, on-prem, or at the edge, Rancher Government Solutions offers the leading software stack for teams adopting containers, addressing the challenges of managing multiple Kubernetes clusters at scale while providing DevOps teams with integrated tools for running containerized workloads. Learn more at ranchergovernment.com.
Charlie did not die from an overdose. Charlie was poisoned.
Websites and social media selling fake medicines may look legitimate, but they're not.
He died in less than 15 minutes after taking the pill.
Any medication not purchased from a licensed pharmacy could be deadly.
No other family should go through this. It's just horrific.
Go to safe.pharmacy. Learn about fake medicine on social media and if an online pharmacy is safe.
We didn't know what to expect. We were just left in a hotel.
My mom was doing drugs in the house.
Tay and Brianna spent years of their childhood in homes that weren't safe. They were placed in foster care and longed for a permanent, loving home.
I didn't know what my future was.
I wouldn't speak to anyone. I was afraid of everything.
With help from the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption, Brianna and Tay were adopted and now feel excited about their futures.
I'm studying to be a chef, and I really want to travel the world.
I'm going to be a mechanic, and I can focus on my career.
Right now, in the United States, there are more than 100,000 children in foster care, just like Brianna and Tay, who need a family now. Learn how you can help at DaveThomasFoundation.org.